Hello, and welcome to another podcast from La Civiltà Cattolica English Edition.
Welcome to the latest installment of the podcasts from La Civiltà Cattolica, this time focusing on an aspect of that church-wide process called synodality. The whole momentum of change in the Catholic Church, driven by the present Pope, is based on participatory form of conversation called a synod. That's what the Pope is driving from Rome. It's what the next synod is on, is what is synodality about. But in Australia, we have had a process going since before the Pope started his synodal process, where we have been encouraged to develop pattern of conversations and preparations for a council of the church in Australia. It's something that's been coming for a long time, but which a lot of bishops have been afraid to allow to unfold because of the way in which it could lead to deeper divisions and greater conflicts. Anyway, this process is now underway. It's a broadly participatory one, and someone who's followed the evolution of this instrument is Geraldine Doog. Geraldine is a very, very experienced, highly respected journalist with the ABC, News and Information, and she's also been very active in the religious news and information dimension of the work of the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. And this conversation with me, Michael Kelly, is the fruit of that. What has she learnt and where does she see the whole thing going? Geraldine, you have been following the evolution of the synodal event approach in Australia. Can you just give our listeners an idea of how it developed and where it is?
Oh, that's just a small task. Look, it's essentially, I think it's a big talk fest designed to get the sense of faith within the Australian Church. That's, I think, the broad remit that was requested. And there are nearly 300 members have been appointed in what turns out to be a very wide-ranging group of people drawn together from across the Catholic system in Australia as members, as observers, as pariti specialists. You know, we know the word pariti from the old Vatican days, people who are in, I think there are about 13 or 15 pariti, I think 10, 13, 15, something like that, people who are perceived to have brought specialist knowledge to advise the members. And the idea is that it's a two-part process, the first of which was in last June in Australia. And the second is this coming June, last August in Australia. The second is this coming June in Australia. And it is a plenary council that make binding recommendations voted on by bishops only. So while it is a very wide invitation to the laity across Australia, this is the first time since 1934, such a council with grunt, if I can put it like that, canon law grunt, has been convened. So very, very significant. Specific recommendations are made by voting members who are only bishops, although I'll come to that in a moment. The whole wide membership votes on a set of recommendations, which then go to the bishops, which then go to the Vatican. The Vatican then has final say, but what they pass, if I can put it like that, then becomes law. The Australian Church must apply them. So you can see that it's a very studied process which has some authority and some deep legitimacy. Now, it's taking quite a long time. It's really been a 3 to 4 year build-up of very much stressing a discernment process. It's not a parliament. It's not a seminar. It's length of time, and I'm stressing this because I've been speaking to some of the people involved and some of the organisers in the last week preparing for this webinar today. The length of time taken is, I think, having quite an impact on people. So it's not a quick and dirty decision-making process. It is a real length of time with spiritual listening, very much drawing on the Ignatian tradition, which, look, I can't be sure whether there aren't people trying to derail it. I think there are groups trying to derail this, but I think there's a broad bulk of middle-brow Catholics who are members who are determined that it be a genuine process. And look, I have qualified optimism about what the outcome will be.
Yes, I share your mixed expectations. In its favour, it's the first time, really the first time in Australian church history, that there has ever been an effort to listen to anybody else but official voices. And that, of course, means those participating have to learn a whole lot of new skills and aptitudes to be able to make the thing work. And I think that's what the evidence to date is suggesting. So I suppose the only real question to be asked is, if that is the case, and it is taking a long time for people to learn how to conduct this sort of a conversation, do you think, on what you've seen and heard, that it's making progress?
The process as set up is definitely making progress. So I think it's very interesting because there was such lack of confidence or a lack of experience about this. They set up a very careful process, and it's quite funny in a way when you talk to people. It's exceptionally sort of methodical. You know, there's a certain process of, you get a sort of a document that comes out about the fruits of the first discussion that's pondered for 6 weeks. Then there's another document that is pondered for 6 weeks. And then there's another document. You know, it's incredibly episodic and systematic. And you might be inclined to say, oh dear, how mediocre. But by the same token, that process, painstaking though it may be, and look, unmajestic and unsexy, let's face it, is forcing people to talk to each other. And I think, in a way, over the period of time, I don't think, as one bishop I heard said, we can't go back. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't people who can't stymie a certain spirit that is been let loose in these conversations with nearly 300 people. And I mean, because I did a series of podcasts last year, I can tell you they're a very broad group. We can't go back to putting all of that back in the box. Will a process deliver something special? Now, that's what, and it's very interesting. If you look at what's happening in Germany with the synod, where it's exploded, shall we say, into its revolutionary best. And I mean, it's given the Vatican hysterics. And I mean, I don't even really know where the German process is at the moment. I think it's very difficult to discern whether it's, you know, the Pandora's box has well and truly been opened. And the bishops seem to be flailing around a bit, trying to work out how to respond to it. I think it's very hard to say where that is going. So it's, on the surface of it, very exciting. Quotes, refreshing. And we seem to be plodding by comparison. But look, I think that Australia just could produce something very special. We're not bad at process. We get worried about sort of animal spirits being let loose. I'm not defending it. I just think it's true in our personality. That's how we got federation in 1901. You know, it was a political process stitched together. Some people say we ought to revisit it and why can't we, etc. But we have form at setting up processes where we don't let the best be the enemy of the good. And we may well be in the sort of two-thirds of the way through that process that actually ends up with better outcomes than we had before, and with people having become skilled, I'm talking about the laity now, become skilled at assessing their own confidence, theologically and practically, and assessing, talking to bishops and the bishops listening to them. But look, it's hanging in the balance. That's how I'd read it at the moment.
So what are the next practical steps? We've got another meeting in June, and then what happens in that and from that?
Well, as I understand it, and look, I yield to people who may come back to you and say, oh, no, no, she's got it slightly wrong. I think there's a big document that has come out, which is the members now have until April the 4th to discern how they're responding in their small groups. They discern it individually, then they go back into their small groups to actually come up with responses that go back to the drafting committee. So there's an eight member, nine advisors on a drafting committee, various bishops, a couple of members. That seems to be doing a very pretty good job, everybody is, because there's an absolute plethora of material that's come out. Like we've opened our own Pandora's box, but I think the outcome is designed to be less on the idea of, like, the Germans, if I can summarise, going for sort of end of celibacy, women's ordination and things like this. We are, from what I can see, we are saying, what can we insist we get out of this? Big pastoral councils, mandatory pastoral councils, mandatory diocesan councils, and maybe even something like a central, I'm just reading my notes here, a central national synodality council. So there's 30 pages up for debate right now, half a theological, half a sort of process or sort of practical. That's what they've got to now. We won't know anything about it if we're not members, if you know what I mean. I mean, we can go onto the website and it's all there. I think it's 30 pages. I haven't gone through it all bit by bit. The question is, ought we know more about it? Now, that's another very interesting running sore. So it's not as transparent, the process, as it could be. And the argument that some people, I've been chatting to a range of people, they say, look, we are allowed, we're invited to talk amongst ourselves. We're not forbidden from discussing this more broadly, but we're not encouraged to discuss more broadly. And you might say, why are the organisers so afraid? Why don't they draw in Catholics in the pews? Because suddenly, come June, there's this big second meeting with these big proposals that are going to broad-based discussion. And are Catholics in the pews really drawn into this? Now, Lana Turvey Collins, who's the sort of main organiser, I've spoken to her about this. She said, look, I'm paraphrasing her now too. We just basically feel that with social media being what it is, if it all goes boom right out and that you invite controversy, which then can derail this very process that they have actually got a lot of confidence in. So I don't know how you feel, Michael. Do we need wider discussion? Would it help us? It probably would. I mean, if I'm a member of the media, I should be saying yes. Are we ready for it in the midst of this turbulent world we're in at the moment with floods and with Ukraine? I'm not so sure. So I said, I'm quite torn about it. Quite torn.
Well, personally, I think if we do go wider, the major problem with going wider is, how do we give people a ticket to come into the conversation? How do we rate what they have to say in terms of their priority as contributors? And then, insofar as people are participating, how can we give them some prospect of a constructive outcome if they do come in anyway? So I don't think that's an easy question to even consider, let alone respond to. It's not clear to me how you can make that as responsive and as adaptable as you need to. It's very difficult to see how that would happen.
Well, as you know, in the build-up, I could have said this earlier, the organising committee did issue invitations to all Catholics to contribute, and to everyone's astonishment, 17,500 did, it was a very, very actually good sign for the Australian Catholic Church,
sure,
that people put so much into it and, you know, very thoughtful. So that was the point at which people were invited in. And so the question is, how would they get them in now when they consider themselves mid-process, trying to really assess what matters, what seriously sort of perturbs Australian Catholics, where they see the next fruitful area of discussion? And look, I mean, you know, the underpinning worry is governance. You know, I might as well put words to what people are saying. Oh, you know, the bishop's just going to come in and say, thwack, you know, look, we don't care how involved you've got. We're not interested in some of your thoughts and we're closing it down. Now, look, I don't think it's actually, they're capable of doing that, even though, as somebody said to me, there is a little touch of Sussex Street behaviour in some of the, you know, like Sussex Street Labour Party behaviour. Like, I think some people are thinking, oh, this could get, quotes, out of control, whatever that means. But look, I think I'm prepared to behave almost like in representative democracy, where I hand the responsibility over to people who have been chosen, in effect, to represent me sitting in the pews. And I will, yes, I'll sort of entrust my version of church to them and see what emerges. I think the other really interesting thing is, what I'm getting out of it anyway, is the durable values of this broad-based Australian Catholic Church, which you and I come from. I mean, you know, you're a priest in it, I'm a layperson in it. And that's what's being tested at the moment. I think the extremes, such as they exist within those members, are not necessarily dominating. I don't think they're dominating, actually. That very interesting document commissioned by the bishops, Light from the Southern Cross, which was a very, very good document. I think we've spoken about it before, really full of all sorts of possibilities, that was presented to the bishops early last year, wasn't it? It was a 2020, you know, you lose your track of COVID years. Real possibilities, terribly impressive. That's being rehabilitated more and being overtly mentioned. That's what's being tested. What did we in the Australian Catholic Church amount to? You know, did we have our own style that had depth, which can be sort of parlayed into something more? That's what we're going to be, that's what we're trying to find out.
And of course, that's all a cultural issue, and cultural issues are almost by definition extraordinarily complex and difficult to tie down, because you know, it's so much part of the impression that a culture makes, and it's so much part of the impression we want to make. It's, to be truthful, it's very hard to completely simplify, but it's absolutely indispensable to maintain it.
I mean, in other words, I don't know what you're detecting from people. Maybe you're detecting complete lack of involvement, are you? I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the people who are involved often come from certain elites.
Yes.
And I don't have much to do with those elites anymore. So I really don't, I don't have any sense of even what the elites are saying. But, you know, anyway, I'm happy to see the thing continue and proceed, recognising that even if it comes up with a formula or a structure, that's just part of the ongoing conversation, and it will take shape or not as time unfolds, and that's there. Are you getting any sense at all of the way people are reacting to the Australian process from outside it, like from other countries that have it going?
Very, very good question. Now, I've raised that with a couple of people. I said, you know, if I were Rome now, I would just grab this process in Australia because we're ahead. You know, there's us and the Germans and there's somebody else. The Irish are onto it too. And this, of course, the confusing thing is this is the plenary, this is a plenary council, and we've got the synod on synodality also unfolding that Pope Francis has. Yeah. So it's a little bit confusing, but they're all, I think, of a piece, really. I don't think there's much. I'm told that the Vatican is very conscious of what is happening in Australia and is watching. But look, my impression is the German one is the one that's robbing people of oxygen. The German one it's such an important church. It's such a wealthy church. It matters much more than Australia in the overall scheme of things. But if we can do it well, honestly, I actually think we could. I mean, I know this sounds silly, but I think it's exactly what we did do in Australia at the start of the 20th century with our admission of women voters. We didn't do, sadly, Indigenous people. And this thing we pulled off called Federation. I actually think we can do, because you see, we're not a great power. We never have been. And we actually, in a way, aim more humbly. But I don't think there's a lot of real notice of us. No, I don't.
I have a friend who's a young woman in Germany who's on their executive committee. And I get the sense from the way that very small but very dedicated and energetic small committee is working. In fact, it's an awful lot of other things happening around it rather than what it is triggering. That is really, really what is most notable. And, you know, she's busy enough and she's contributing, but she's very much aware that it's fishbowl stuff, and she's just a little goldfish swimming around, wondering what it's all about, and the real action is outside the goldfish pool, and is happening in the environment around the fish pond.
Oh, well, that is very interesting. Look, that could be right as well, because it's true that the Germans have this system whereby they, in effect, they pay a tithe through their tax system to the church. And so the church has this absolute assured money stream coming into it. It's a particular, I think it was set up post-war, but I don't hold me to that.
Adolf Hitler set it up.
Oh, Hitler set it up, did he?
Yes.
Did he?
Yes, it's when the clergy started to get paid.
Oh, right. Okay, I didn't know that. Right. And like they've had these huge resignations because you can decline, can't you? So it's been very vivid. And of course we've got Pope Benedict in there. And so yes, there are undoubtedly a lot happening, but I also get the impression that the fact that a synodal process has been set up makes it very public. So all of that fishbowl stuff is being sort of refracted through that prism, and it gets reported on. And the Vatican, which is, somebody said to me yesterday, is organized, couriers organized chaos anyway. They said, oh, what is this? They don't know what to do about it. I just think, and look, there'll be people listening today say, God, I wish we were a bit more like that. Because sort of cleaning out the Augean stables. And I think you might have said that yourself, Michael, but I still think that, I prefer this more orderly process. You know what I really do think? Because I think it encourages respect between those who do hold the reins of power at the moment in the church and those who have to get in there, namely the laity. That's one of the things that I think could be the real yield of all this.
Yeah, the other thing too is that we should never forget that, in fact, the Australian Church, though the nomenclature is in favour of the clergy and bishops, in fact, most of the effective work of the Australian Church is done by lay people, and it's done through ministries, schools, hospitals, welfare institutions, which are run by people, most of whom, though by no means all of whom, are actually animated by their faith commitment. So that's only going to, get more so and become much more significant as time unfolds, that we have pool of people who have reached a stage of commitment and expression of that commitment in service, that it's I feel myself to be part of a generation in between all of this, because I joined religious life during the heyday of religious life. Now, heyday of religious life actually died within minutes of my joining religious life. and in what Bertie Bryant used to say about favoured horses charging down the straight at Flemington that get overtaken by others, they collapse like a prick balloon. And the whole thing did collapse like a prick balloon. And that is actually one of the triggers for this synodal process, namely that the structure doesn't exist anymore and we don't know quite what to do. So we have to go back and find out what it can be.
Precisely.
By consulting each other.
Precisely. I mean, that's exactly what somebody said to me yesterday. You know, we've now got the only place hundreds of thousands of Australian children even encounter the notion of form of anything like a formalised introduction to God is in the schools. They don't do it at home at all. They don't meet it out in the culture. They do it in the schools. So they're not, you know, they're not, the parish doesn't exist for them, most by and large. So we can't go on like that. But doesn't mean we wring our hands and say it's all over. I don't think. I've once wondered about that. I think we just say we pivot the way loads of institutions are having to do it. Say, okay, so how do we rethink? How do we rethink that and build on the strengths and reinsert ourselves and all the gems of the tradition into the culture? Now, the Light from the Southern Cross, that's why it's worth reading again its summaries to see how they think it can be done, but it's certainly vastly more than Father in the parish.
Well, you see, I think the reality is that this is happening to every institution in Australia. I mean, look at the political parties, all the political parties, not just the Labor Party, because the Labor Party tends to talk about itself much more than the Liberal Party does, but the Labor Party, also the universities, every major institution in the country is going through a rethink. I mean, we're three quarters of the way through the reinvention of the public service, and it looks to me like it's going to have to turn around and go backwards. But the public service, you know, when you and I were kids, however long ago, the people who went into the public service were by and large the intelligent, educated, capable people who would never be able to start a business or run a business or get promoted in a business, but they could get promoted by an externalised form of the acquisition of merit through the public service. So they did that and they went on and made a difference that way. Now, I think we're in a stage in the Catholic Church where the structure we had and the people who ran it have now effectively disappeared without trace. They still hold decision-making positions, much of which people just don't give a hoot for and don't give a toss for, but the structure is still there. Now, we're in the process of changing all that. I mean, think back to the 1960s, which is something I'm quite familiar with, and the time of change that came in the 1960s. But, you know, just take the Labor Party, for instance, and the federal executive and the power that it had over the structure of the party. Now, very much like the, you know, famously mentioned by B.A. Santa Maria as the 36 faceless men. Yeah, the 36 people who actually made the decisions about what was to become of the Australian Labor Party. Anyway, that's all changed. It's all changed, and the Australian Labor Party is subject to forces of change that it doesn't know how to interpret or manage or direct, but it's changing. It's forced to change. Catholic Church is the same. It used to be you had to defer and wait till bishops, till even the bishops realised they actually don't have the power anymore. They don't have the capacity to actually, you know, affect the shape of institutions. They don't have the capacity.
Do you think they have worked that out? I think they have, possibly.
I think they have, because they're constantly shaking their heads and looking for where do we go from here? And it's not coming with them.
Yeah, I mean, I've felt for quite a long time that they're very demoralised, even though they don't necessarily present that front all the time. But I think, look, you know, you speak to captains of industry, they can get exceptionally demoralised, believe you me. You know, and like right now we're going through this, as the Financial Review said, hinge of history in terms of internationally, let alone what we're finding out about the way our grand old country copes with all sorts of natural disasters. So, look, I think...
Let's pull this together and just come to a couple of summary statements about the shape of the process of change that's going on, which is being triggered by our synodal process or working towards a national council, and try to focus it by saying, what do you think will be the focus and outcome of this process as delivered through the council which we're going to have and which will have a lasting and significant impact?
Well, I think there'll be efforts by some people to really stretch people beyond their comfort zone in terms of certain governance issues around choice of bishop, parish, priest, things like that. How far that gets and whether that sort of wrecks a little bit of the trust, I'm not sure. I think we will have a focus on a machinery that insists that the lay people get in there, get access to budgets, get access to money, are perceived to have clout. And now, quite how canon law accommodates all this, I am not an expert on this. I know that there are differing interpretations of how canon law, what it actually allows and what it doesn't. But I think there'll be structures that draw people in with a great effort to make sure they don't become Anglican-like parliamentary structures with lobby groups sort of lobbying for political control. That will not be a success. I don't want the Anglican Synod process. I think that there's a prayerful reflection being stressed, which is very much an outgrowth from your tradition, the Ignatian tradition, which I think is a very good thing. I think we might have, somebody suggested to me, we might have big sort of, when we have an ACB, Australian Council of Bishops meeting, what we might have in the future is the day before that, we have this bigger, what it might be called, some sort of a synodal council meeting, and that they go back to back so that you fundamentally change the look of governance of the Australian Catholic Church. Now, that might sound about as interesting as watching paint dry, what I'm describing to you, but I actually think that would matter. And then the laity would start the business of what I think is actually sort of reaching into making this set of beliefs and values and tradition have a much more pastoral feel, a pastoral celebratory feel in modern Australia. I can think of a range of ways, but that's what I'd be stressing.
Okay, well, we can submit that and humbly hope for it. But what's basically going to happen is something's got to happen. Something will happen, because the thing working against vacuity is that so much effort's been put into this, and the bishops know that. And if the bishops, if they're going to carry the church in Australia, they're going to have to be seen to be not living in splendid isolation, but actually picking up what's being suggested or thought or said find some constructive way of doing it. Because otherwise, their irrelevance to the body they think they lead will be just completely obvious to everybody and even to them. So that, you know, there's got to be something come of this, whether it's all that we want or enough of what we want, that's where the argument will be.
Look, I think there'll have to be, I was thinking about this morning, sat down over a cup of coffee, and I thought, look, there will be some effort at manipulation, I'm pretty sure, before the whole process is seen out in actually July, first week of July, sorry, I've said June. And the people who want anything like what I'm talking about will have to become wily. They will have to become wily. You won't, in my opinion, they'll have to be clever and a little bit cute, prayerfully cute, if I can put it like that. It won't just, there will be some efforts at derailment, I think.
Well, Jesus, of course, said much the same, that, you know, we have to be as as cunning as serpents and as gentle as doves.
Yeah.
I think there will be that, and there has been that in the past, and they could do it again. And of course, what'll turn up? I mean, if you look at the most lasting changes since the last big event in the history of the church, which was the Council of Trent, one of them is the factory that's produced clericalism, which is the seminary.
Yep.
Now, the seminaries have collapsed like prick balloons, thanks again to Bertie Bryant. The seminaries are finished. They've had it. They're over. However, leadership in the church is not over, and how we form people for leadership in the church is still an open question. And that one will have to be addressed as time unfolds. But it is there to be addressed. It is there to be considered and decided about how we just go about doing precisely that. And I don't know the answer to that, but I know it's a question that has to be asked and answered if the show is to go forward. So that's certainly there as an item on the agenda that has to be addressed. You know,
it got a lot of addressing in that first session last year. There was some very interesting thinking about that. Very interesting. So that's part of what they've got to put together.
Yeah, and the seminaries are finished in the sense in which they existed before, but they lasted for 400 years.
Mm.
The seminary system. But it didn't actually directly come out of the Council of Trent. It didn't emerge until Charles Borromeo put it into effect, and he did that about 40 or 50 years after the end of the Council of Trent. So, you know, I think what we see happen, the old story about the Catholic Church, that if you want to understand the Church, you can't think in terms of days, weeks, months or years. You've got to think in terms of decades and a century. And I remember the person who probably had the greatest impact on my thinking about the history of the church and the understanding of church change in the church was the fellow who taught me church history in the 1980s. He's an Irishman, came out to Australia in the 30s, expecting to die of TB. Well, he did die in Australia, but of cancer 50 years later, not of TB. But he had TB, active TB, all his life. Now, this guy, Valentine G. Moran, was a wonderful, wonderful historian and a beautiful written stylist, just a fantastic character. Val said to me in the 1980s a couple of things. When I expressed amazement and dismay about the appointment of George Pell as an auxiliary bishop, he said to me, he says, "Oh, my boy," he said, "you don't understand the Roman Church." And I said, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "The next two bishops to be appointed in Melbourne will be Peter Elliott and Dennis Hart." And I said, "Val, you're an Irishman, but I didn't think you were a black Irishman. How could you say that?" He says, "Oh, no," that's what he said, "you don't understand the Roman Church." And I said, "Okay, well, what's going to happen?" He said, "They will be appointed, surely enough." Now, I think that's what's being undone. It happened. And he had a much keener understanding of the way the thing works than I did. And I respect that. And I respect, you know, that he called it much better than I could have or did. But what I'm getting at is to just simply say that the changes that actually occur and unfold down the track are not the ones that immediately occur. I mean, this same Val Moran said to me, "We won't start seeing change that follows the Second Vatican Council for 50 years after the council."
Did he say that, did he? Right. Yeah.
And guess what happened?
Very interesting.
Almost exactly 50 years after the calling of the council.
Well, of course, I must say, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I've really been reflecting on that. And because there was enormous enthusiasm and energy, as you know, release of animal spirits. And quite a lot of those people, those exact people, who geared up, who joined the talking groups, who got involved, who are rejoining sort of reluctantly and slightly gritted teeth through the current process, being invited in. Apparently it's particularly true in Ireland. And I thought, well, so what did all of that energy of theirs amount to earlier? Well, of course, it was very important, but it obviously stayed on the surface of a lot of things, that the machinery didn't really move. And maybe now the machinery, just exactly as your father Val is saying, is being really challenged because of crises left, right and centre. It's been a very important, timely, you know, calling Pope, John the 23rd, calling that, set us up for now.
Correct. And if you look at the actual history, Val predicted that it would take 50 years for the council to start to have any effect. The council opened in 1962, 2000, and I said to Val, I said, so you're saying we won't really see much change until about 2013 to 2015. He said, exactly. Now, what happened in 2013 was the election of Bergoglio as Pope. And we've seen what's happened there. He's had to push uphill for the instituting of changes that are perfectly consistent with the Second Vatican
Council. Yeah, yeah. I know. But it's
as though, you know, he's completely and utterly overturning the traces to get that to happen. Well, you know, 50 years ago, that's what Val said. And then he said to me, he said, the council will not really be, you know, de rigueur, will not really be the way that things are done for 100 years. It'll take 100 years. It'll take 100 years for, he said, if you look at the history of every council, it's 100 years till it's actually really properly. But then if you look at it, you look at history outside of church history, you know, economic cycles are 30 to 40 years. You know, we move from one type of economy to another type of economy in 30 to 40 years. Political cycles where the ideologies pertain, you know, are probably 10 to 20 years. Cultural cycles are 100 years, 50 to 100 years. I mean, you think back to the world that our parents grew up in. You think of the worlds that we grew up in, and then you think of the world that our grandchildren will grow up in, and they're very, very, very long cycles.
There's a great quote that I actually was going to put into my Saturday show that somebody reminded me of, Lenin's quote. There are decades where nothing happens and there are weeks where decades happen.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's what we're living through at the moment. Like, there does seem to be,
yeah,
there seems to be an incredible speed. And, of course, to see how the democracies have turned on a dime is, you know, breathtaking in the extreme. And and look how it all pans out, we've yet to see. But look, I do think that the sort of media changes, social media changes, possibly speed up some of that which you're talking about, particularly in the culture. And of course, it just means you've got to hang on. You've got to, you know, if you believe in more openness. You know, I fundamentally believe in more openness in my church. And I believe in the bringing in of talents, you know, so many talents in the Australian church are not being adequately brought in. That's what I want to have.
The reason they're not coming in is that ideology prevails, and ideology excludes people.
Well, it does. And people, you know, there's been a style, and because I've been saying for ages, it both asks something of the clergy and the clerical caste and bishops and so on, and it asks something of the laity. The laity have got, and that's what makes this council, and talking to people these last couple of weeks, people are putting hours and hours into this, you know, derailing their normal lives in order to really, you know, as Lana Turvey Collins said to me, that all the evidence is people, they've had a couple of resignations, but people are staying the course and they're engaged. As she said, the best we can tell, they are fully engaged and trying their best. Now, if that isn't a big tick, I don't know what is. But we've got a lot further to go, but at least that tells me something is still on track.
Good-o. Well, thank you very much for that update, Geraldine. May our best hopes be realised.
Amen to that.
All right. See you soon, I hope.
See you later. See ya. Yeah, indeed. Ta-da. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Subscriptions to the English edition of La Civiltà Cattolica range in price from $14.95 to $200. For short-term and annual subscriptions, for individuals and for groups. For further information, go to lacivoltacattolica.com, subscribe. LACIVILTACATTOLICA.com/subscribe.